This is a FUBAR Radio podcast. If you need any more information, head to FUBARradio.com.
Screen Talk with Dan Clark on FUBAR Radio.
Hello and welcome to Screen Talk. Here we are doing a live version of this. Well, not live if you're listening to this as a podcast, but live if you're listening now. Or not now, but you know. You know what I'm saying. Anyway, we're live. We've got a great show. I'll be talking to Neil Stuke, the actor who you will know from Game On, Silent Witness, more recently the mega smash Dr. Foster. We'll be chatting in a minute. But first, let us talk with my brother-in-arms, Mr. James Gill. Hello, James.
I'd love to be your brother.
Would you?
I really would.
How would that change things?
I just love you even more.
Oh, that's so beautiful.
Thanks.
I'm going to weep a little bit, but while I do that, why don't you tell us some stuff that you kind of... that's been on your mind. I've got a few things I want to talk about, but what's...
The mortgage.
Yeah. Oh, God, how am I going
to
pay?
So I saw Justice League on Wednesday. I went to a preview screening with friend of the show, Brett Goldstein.
Yes, big friend.
I liked it more than Brett. So about 20 minutes in,
you actually asked me if I wanted to go. You were very kind. You said you had tickets. I was like, can't think of anything I'd rather
Brett, if you're listening, you were always my first choice.
Sorry, yeah, Brett.
definitely wasn't because Dan said no. Brett, stop listening. Yeah. Call me. Yeah. We can sort this out. So about 20 minutes in, we whispered, because we'd read yeah. the morning reviews, which were the equivalent of, you know, a punch in the face. Mm. And about 20 minutes in, we whispered to each other, this is all right. This is all right. And then three magic boxes appear, and I actually started laughing.
What do you mean magic boxes?
So, the MacGuffin that Alfred Hitchcock talks about, the MacGuffin that propels the story forward. So in the Justice League, the MacGuffin are these three magic boxes from days of yore, and one box was protected by the merpeople that from Aquaman's world, some were protected by man, some were protected by the Amazonians, and the three boxes need to be brought together by the villain, and, you know, yada, yada, yada. But the thing with as soon as you get onto magic boxes, I just think that not even 99%, I think 100% of audiences will just think, I don't care. So unfortunately, the plot is a bit of a shambles. However, in spite of everything that's wrong with the movie, and there's loads wrong with the movie, I still totally enjoyed it. And it was lovely to see the gang back together. So Gal Gadot...
Back together? This is the first time they've been
together,
isn't
it? Well, no, because Superman, Batman and Wonder Woman... I mean, they were together in Batman vs. Superman. Okay. And let's be honest, they're the three.
They're
the holy trinity of the DC universe.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I'm spoiling things when I say that we do see Superman. So Ezra Miller, I think, is joyous. He gets the gags as the Flash. Gal Gadot, you know, what a talent. You know, she has tremendous empathy and integrity, and you really root for her. You want her to win.
Mm-hmm.
Henry Cavill is absolutely fine as Superman. The person I felt sorry for, what I'm building up to, is poor Ray Fisher as Cyborg. It's not even a two-dimensional character. I mean, if you were to describe each one, you know, with an adjective, when you get to poor old Ray Fisher, I just don't know what you'd say, and I cannot imagine them giving this guy a solo outing, because I mean the poor guy, his character is clever and that's about it. Jason Momoa as Aquaman is permanently 5 seconds away from shouting cowabunga. I mean, it is astonishing. Damn, my man! Like that. I mean, he is Michelangelo from The Turtles.
Yeah.
And there's a bit where they crowbar in Amber Heard to blatantly plug the Aquaman movie that's coming out next year.
I just don't get it. I don't get the vibe, the feel of it. When I see the trailers, it looks like all the backdrops and sets are animated. It's all got this, like, someone's from another world, someone's a cyclops, someone's... It just doesn't... I even had that problem, and I know, like, I'm in the minority because these things are mega smash hits, but I even had that problem with the Avengers. When you start mixing people from, you know, like, Thor world with... Hulk and then Iron Man, when Iron Man was actually quite grounded in a weird sort of way in reality, and you know, it just to me it's like I don't get the mishmash of tones and
I would say that Marvel have actually nailed that.
They're popular and well received.
They will crack gags about the very fact that this, you know, there's a line that Hawkeye has in the second Avengers movie where he says something like, "We're fighting aliens from out of space. I've got a bow and arrow. None of this make sense, right? Which, I mean, what a line that is. I mean, it's just Marvel's way of turning to the audience, shrugging the shoulders and going, just enjoy it, guys.
Yeah.
And DC don't... By the way, I don't know if I said Cyborg. I meant Cyborg rather than Cyclops. Cyborg. So what we do need to talk about is the fact that Zack Snyder tragically had to leave the film for family reasons. Mm-hmm. And so Joss Whedon was brought in. And so... I mean, that's tricky to talk about because there is unquestionably a stylistic clash, and I think I would be able to bet money on which scenes were Zack Snyder's and which ones were Joss Whedon's. So that is unfortunate. So what I would say, if I was going to be super positive, which I am, one would like to think that the next Justice League movie, where you've got a single person's vision, they're gonna nail it. The fact that they start the movie with the most important character, Superman, dead. I mean, that's not ideal, is it, for your first for your first outing? You know, you won't kick off an 18 movie with B.A. Baracus dead. Yeah. So you know,
maybe that, passed out because they have to get him. Yeah, on the plane, but not dead.
Yes,
not a dead.
Get in there. That was brilliant. Start off with a cheeky milkshake. Yes, absolutely. So that is not ideal. So the next one, hopefully. What I would say is, if you like those movies, pay your £15, have some fun, and also, what again, the CGI villain. When has a CGI villain ever worked?
I still don't like the fact that they CGI the Hulk. Why can't he just be a Lou Ferrigno, a bigger sort of? To me, it's the character isn't going from man to monster; he's going from man to CGI,
man to animated film. Yeah. But when you get a CGI villain, and the whole finale is CGI, and I'm not spoiling anything there because the finale of all these movies is CGI. Yeah. And it is like a cutscene in a video game. And as soon as it... A bit like the Total Recall remake with Colin Farrell, as soon as it feels like a video game, there is zero jeopardy.
So it's going to make a lot of money still, though, isn't it? Even with the...
I genuinely hope so. I have so much good... I'm 39 years old. I still read Batman comics to this day, as do some of my friends on the comedy circuit.
Yeah.
There's so much goodwill towards these characters. There's so much love for Superman and Wonder Woman and Batman. And Ezra Miller is great as The Flash. That Warner Brothers and DC, I say this from the bottom of my heart, I really hope you can sort this out. I really mean that.
Well, you know, I'm not as into the whole superhero thing as you are, I would say, by quite a massive stretch. But I still got excited by the idea of Matt Reeves doing the Batman.
Absolutely.
Because he's an amazing filmmaker. And
he's got his own thing going on, what he did with the Apes movies. Oh, I mean, sensational.
So I'm excited by that, but I still feel like, could they not just hold off on superhero movies for, like, I don't know, 3 years,
pause
4 years?
For 3 years. Well,
just make everyone become excited again and rethink, like, because at the moment it's just this...
I know what you mean, but then Marvel bring out a film like Thor Ragnarok, and you're like, these movies can be awesome. When a director, I think,
maybe
is
they
allowed
should,
to...
they should be allowed one a year, just for the next few years.
At the moment, it's more or less one every
couple
one
of
or
months.
Two months, isn't it?
Yeah, totally. There's rumours...
What I would say is, I'm sure that Warners and DC would... I'm sure they've had a meeting where someone has said, should we not just start this again?
Yeah.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
Because they're yet to nail it.
Ben Affleck was due to write, direct, and star in the standalone Batman film.
Yes.
He's now not direct. And I love him as a director. I know you do too. Yeah. A big fan of his films. So that was intriguing. I was like, oh, that could be good. But I'm not... And I like him as an actor, but I'm not a huge fan of him as Batman. In general, I'm going to go out and say this. I sort of miss... jokey, rom-commy, feel-good Ben Affleck.
Okay.
You know, like, he's doing
a lot
of films where he just stands and be moody and it's
at least
like,
it looked like he was having fun in those movies.
Yeah.
Because in this film, and I'm with you, I'm part of the Ben Affleck Appreciation Society, there are times where it doesn't look like he's having that much fun. All right, I know you could say he's playing Bruce Wayne, why would he be having fun? But there are times where it does look like he almost doesn't want to be there.
Yeah. I don't know if that's him trying to just like do...
Try to be moody.
Be like moody and still, and that's a character choice or performance choice. But he seems to do... He did that in Argo, and he does that in, you know, a lot of his films. But
The Town, he was there, wasn't he? He was present in that.
That's true. I just kind of...
The reason why they probably can't start again, I imagine, is primarily Gal Gadot, because she's so...
But
brilliant.
They can do separate ones, can't they?
Yeah, but they can't reboot the Justice League because Gal Gadot is so good that they've almost. I'll tell you what, Gal Gadot, if you're a fan of 90s football, the Justice League and the current DC Universe is 1990s Southampton, and Gal Gadot is Matt Letizia. She's absolutely okay. Running the show.
You could have just been going. I had no idea what you meant.
I mean, Suicide Squad. Oh,
what
goodness.
About the fact that the Rotten Tomatoes website, which there's a lot of contention about this, the how much control they supposedly have and influence, that they embargoed or they agreed to not release the rating, the aggregate, that's whatever they call it. On Justice League. Now, I don't know if that's a favour from Rotten Tomatoes to go, look, we're not going to ruin your movie, or... But the fact that we live in a world now where a website that aggregates scores can or can't... Like, they do say that it's not as influential as people think, but if they're embargoing the score, surely it is influential.
Personally, I do think they are influential.
Yeah.
We live in, I know we've talked about this many times, but we live in an age where people will go see a movie rather than who's in it. They will go see the movie if it's good. And Rotten Tomatoes is an excellent way to find out.
Well, that's not true, because Batman versus Superman got slated by the critics and they went to see it.
Still underperformed, though. And, didn't make more than $1 billion. And when you've got a movie with Superman and Batman
enough,
in it,
but
you've got to break a billion.
It didn't kill it.
No.
And the same with, what was the villains one?
Oh, no, but
Suicide Squad.
But we've always said that the intellectual property is key as well. So if it's very good and if the intellectual property is strong... However, the thing with Rotten Tomatoes is people do go on there, and if the average rating is, let's say, you know, 93%, people are probably going to go see the movie. If the average rating is 16%, you know, you think of like the Emoji movie, for example. That was toxic enough for people to go, you know what, I'm going to give that a swerve.
But what about if a film gets 50%? Now, if I see on Metacritic or Metascore, whatever it is, 50%, and the colour, like, it's gone from green to amber or whatever. I'm a bit like, meh. And that's annoying, because actually, if you click on it and look at the reviews, there might be some, like, 10 out of 10s, and then there's some 3 out of 10s. And what you should gauge is that some people love it, some people don't. But this weird sort of aggregation, is that a word?
Yeah, let's say it is.
Aggregate.
Yes.
Of it makes it this other thing that it isn't necessarily. Sure, if it's completely 4% or 97%, then you're thinking, oh, okay.
It is odd that they've done that.
Well, it's not odd, it's convenient, but it's just a shame, I think, that this is... And the fact that they are... By the way, how do people do an embargo? That's something I've never understood. I remember, like, when there was some scandal with some football player and some a Page 3 mod or something. There was some sort of affair
letter
thing.
From the lawyers.
But how are you allowed to tell people not to... Like, I've never understood how... Like, what's the...
Well, go on.
How do you go, no, you're not allowed to print about that? Well, what's the difference between telling someone you're not allowed to print?
Say with a movie, they would protect the screening, so they wouldn't let you actually see the movie until it actually comes out. So they would actually put an embargo on the film being seen.
Okay.
And then also, but then if the screening was early and everyone, you know, hated it.
But what if they have seen it and then someone knows something?
Well, then you would get a very polite email from the studio, say, the embargo for this movie.
What stops them from...
Because then that studio might never
work with
you again.
Because the amount of times there's scandal and people release stuff without permission, I don't understand why there's suddenly this weird area where people adhere to permission or not.
Because you don't want to fall out with people.
Right.
So I guess, let's say I'm going to make up a film studio just to avoid being sued.
Yeah.
FUBAR Film Studios have made a film that they thought was brilliant.
Yeah.
You and I see it. It's absolutely bobbins.
Yeah.
They say, please don't write about it. So we don't. We agree to that.
And
because we want to work with them
in
future.
Right. Well, that brings me, just very quickly, very quickly too, because we haven't got much time. This thing where Disney banned the LA Times. Did you read about this?
Yes.
So they banned them because the LA Times had written a 2-page article on the way they're treating the locals in this town, Anaheim, where they've got a Disney Studios.
Yes.
And they exposed some bad, you know, they've had some sort of negative effect on local businesses or something like that. And Disney didn't like the article.
What I would say is that's very... So I used to be a sports writer for about 10 years.
Yeah.
That's quite common in sports. So if a football club doesn't like an article that's been written by a certain newspaper, it's not uncommon for a newspaper to be banned. I think it happens more than perhaps people realise.
I'd never really heard this. Disney banned the LA Times, saying you can never come to any press screenings or you've got no privileges with Disney films, which you and I both know is half, maybe three quarters of Hollywood.
If you want to have a look at the top 50 grossing movies of recent
Disney
years,
owned Marvel and Pixar and Star Wars and so all that stuff. Yep. But then all the other newspapers, New York Times, LA Times, all these other people said...
Show of solidarity.
Solidarity, well, we're not going to review your films. And Disney went, all right, you can come in the end. But I thought that's like, it's an interesting dynamic, and you have explained it quite well there.
I mean, it's odd and it's not ideal, but that is a thing that happens, and it's a thing that's happened for many, many years.
Yeah.
If someone wants to try flex some muscle... They will do in that situation where all the newspapers got together. It turns out there was a happy ending, I guess. Very diplomatic of me there.
Mm, yeah, very. Look, before we...
I was going to say, Justice League, if you want me to... Jesse Eisenberg.
Oh, yeah. You've got 1 minute to tell this story, though.
I interviewed Jesse Eisenberg about 18 months ago, and my daughter was less than 1 year old, and my wife was away. And I did it on the phone in the kitchen, and I thought... This will be fine. I will chat with Jesse Eisenberg, a.k.a. Lex Luthor, and my daughter will be absolutely fine with it. And then we're about 20 minutes into the conversation. Lovely guy. Then my daughter started crying, but not just crying, but like full on.
Screaming.
And then Jesse Eisenberg was going, is your daughter okay? And I'm going, yeah, it'll be fine. It'll be absolutely fine, Jesse. It'll be fine. And then after about 10 more minutes of screaming, he went, oh, look, if you like, I'm free tomorrow. We can do this tomorrow. And I'm going, are you absolutely sure? It's absolutely fine. And the next day he phoned me absolutely to the second of the time that we agreed and did the interview. So what I'm saying is, as a nice positive Justice League story, he's a nice dude, because what I did was very unprofessional and he could have easily reported me to the studio.
In a world where there's a lot of trash and expose at the moment, it's nice to
about
hear
about horrible white guys. Jesse Eisenberg, if you're listening, I love you so much.
Oh, well, James, thank you very much. Come back very soon.
Always be comedies every Thursday.
Every Thursday in Kennington. This is coming up. This is Neil Stuke. I'll be talking to him. His first choice of song or piece of music is from the movie Once Upon a Time in America, the amazing Ennio Morricone. Thank you. Marconi. Neil, hello, welcome.
Hello.
Why did you pick that piece of music? It's a very beautiful piece of music, but is there a special reason?
Yeah, I suppose it's sort of, apart from it being clearly a work of genius, but I grew up with all the Westerns, the Clint Eastwood Westerns.
Yeah, yeah.
And he did all the music for those. And I could have picked one of those. But obviously, as I sort of grew up, Robert De Niro, all those kind of actors became so important to me. And there was a group of us. I was working in a shop called Robot at the time in London.
Which is what kind of shop?
Which was kind of very famous for shoes, way back. Okay. I'm so much older than you, so... a gang of us went to see this film, but with unbelievable excitement.
You were in a gang?
A group of friends went
just,
to see
just
it.
Just wanted to clarify, that's all, because this is about gangs, this music
and
this film.
Yeah, and we went to see it, and the excitement of going to see it, and the music just was breathtaking. The whole experience was breathtaking. We came out completely...
What age were you when you saw this? It's quite a grown-up film, isn't it?
Yeah, so I think I must have been about 18.
Yeah.
Something like that, 17, 18 maybe.
That's the sort of the age that you probably can appreciate this kind of thing, isn't it?
I was just blown away. I was very lucky, though. I grew up in a small town called Deal in Kent, and there was a group of us, not a gang.
Yeah.
Let's just make that clear.
Are there gangs in Deal?
Really appreciated, yes, there are. We really appreciated movies.
Yeah.
And we just were real avid movie fans. We used to get videos, we used to watch them all the time. You know, I'm talking kind of French, Italian films. You know, we were pretty cool.
In your mid-teens?
This is even earlier.
Really?
Yeah, I left Deal when I was 16. We'd wear Eau Sauvage and smoke Gitane cigarettes.
Did you have polo necks and...
Yeah, we did. Or turtlenecks or whatever.
We
did listen to jazz.
Yeah.
And I suppose we're a bit different.
What is your favourite of all the art house genres? Is it like French New Wave or...?
I think I'm going to go French.
Yeah.
Only because, some of my favourite, Jean-Paul Belmondo. I mean, just being an actor, watching him act, huge influence. Obviously later, all the sort of Jean de Florets and all those kind of films, But... I used to watch what's his name all the time, big fat bloke with a massive nose. What's it?
Gerard Depardieu.
Gerard Depardieu.
Yeah,
yeah, and
pre Hollywood.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
Explosive waistline. when he was that kind of young nutcase, and those films coming out of France were crazy.
Yeah. Isn't it funny how a lot of people, directors included, have this amazing career in, say, France, or happens a lot in, Japan and, different places around the world. And then when they go to Hollywood, what they end up making and doing is so different to what they were doing back there.
Yeah.
That if you only knew them for their American stuff, you'd just be like, well, what's the fuss,
Yeah. But you know what? That matters to a lot of people. People really care about that. I think the individual's like, oh, what the hell?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'm having great...
I'm having a good time.
I'm earning, loads.
Yeah.
I'm eating in diners. I'm going crazy, go on.
Let's talk about you. Let's talk about you a bit.
Yeah.
I haven't seen you since we did... do you remember that little theatre workshop we did? Whatever happened to that?
Was it called Frogs?
It was Frogs.
I got offered it.
Did
recently,
you?
Yeah.
So it's actually happening?
I think it happened at the... There's that wonderful theatre in Finsbury Park.
Oh, yeah, the little...
Park.
Yeah, yeah. That's nice, that theatre, yeah.
And God bless them. They offer me lots of stuff there, and I'm never available to do it. But that was one of them. So it did go on.
Oh, that's good. Well, that's we did that about 6 years ago or something crazy.
We did.
No, wow.
We did.
And whatever happened to those actors, eh?
Well, Tom unfortunately died.
What?
Yeah.
No way.
Sorry to let
you
know.
Oh, God.
That. Yeah. Yeah,
so he was such a lovely man.
Yeah, he was. We became great friends after that. But very sad.
You like keeping your toe in the theatre world, though, don't you?
I do. The last play I did was Frankie and Johnny at the Chichester Theatre with Dervla Cohen.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. And we were supposed to bring that into town, but it never quite materialised.
That's a good part to play, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
And did you play it American?
Oh, God.
Yeah.
We were full out.
I actually saw you in a play... years ago,
yeah.
American Buffalo. And who else was that? Douglas Henshaw, was
Douglas
he?
Douglas Henshaw and Nick Woodison.
I can't remember.
He's sort of brilliant character actor.
Yeah, yeah.
Everybody knows his face.
Yeah.
But, you know, they don't know his
That's
name.
A great, great show.
It was a really good show.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
In the Round, I seem to remember.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. The Young Vic Theatre, yeah, which has changed considerably now, but it's still marvellous. I did a play there recently, actually, called Bull, Mike Bartlett's Bull, I think just before Frankie and Johnny. So, yeah.
So what? How do you decide to do a play? Because you obviously get, you do a lot, you're always busy. In my head, you're always busy.
I do
a lot of TV.
Yeah.
What makes you go, okay, I'm going to do this for 6 months or 3 months or whatever. It's not going to pay very well. How do you, you've got kids, right?
Yeah.
You've got a wife. You've got payments to make every month. How do you make those calls?
Well, you're sort of rounding it all up quite nicely, actually, and making my job very easy because, unfortunately, all those factors come into play now.
Yeah.
So it's not as easy as it used to be. It's not, you know, I can't just say yes to lovely plays that I get offered. I have to sort of think about financial things and this thing and the, you know.
But something must come along where you go, I just got to do this.
Yeah, I mean, Frank and Johnny was one of them, actually. You know, Dervla had been sort of, you know, constantly pushing me to do it. And she got me in the end. It was just fantastic.
So, presumably you've got a relationship from that. Have you worked together in the past?
Dervla and I have worked together. She's also married to a very good friend of mine, Rupert Perry Jones. You know, and they live nearby, near Chichester. So
she was knocking
on
the door every day.
No brainer. Yeah. And, of course, the play opens with us making love together.
That must have been interesting for the partners.
Something she obviously wanted Rupert to see. You know?
Well, let's. We could talk about that some more if you like. You've just come off the back of a massive hit on Dr. Foster, right?
Oh God, yeah.
Now that was huge, wasn't it?
Bonkers.
Did any of you expect that? Did you get a feeling it could be something that gripped the nation?
I can honestly speak for everybody involved when I say no.
Yeah.
I think we thought, like with all Mike Bartlett's work, we all thought it was incredible.
Yeah.
But I think there was an element of risk involved.
Because?
Just because of the material.
Yeah.
And so we never really, I don't think anyone quite knew how it was going to go down. It then broke all kind of world records for one-off drama. Beating Downton Abbey. Downton Abbey's like Christmas special or something.
Yeah, yeah.
By about 5 million.
Yeah.
I think it got up to about 12 million, 30 million or something.
Which
for 5 episodes.
Yeah.
So
which in this day and age where everything's so fragmented and you've got so many different things you can watch and you can watch on you know, replay and iPlayer and all that. To get those sort of numbers is crazy, isn't it? Could you feel a difference when the first series was going out and it was catching on like that? Do you notice a difference between something that's a hit like that and another show?
Yeah, oh, definitely.
Really?
Oh, God, yeah.
You can
really sort of feel it. I mean, it just sort of tapped into the zeitgeist, really. I mean, everybody was talking about it.
Yeah.
You know, and then suddenly there was article after article about it, and then everybody's talking about it on every news channel, you know, Chris Evans in the morning, blah, blah, blah. So, yeah, it was a palpable hit. But, you know, it's all over and done with in 5 weeks. You know what I mean? I mean, we then thought that was just a one-off, and then get asked to do it again, which is great. And then, of course, you've got the pressure and the expectations on the second series. People still loved it.
And it's one of those ones where everyone's like, I just would walk past magazine racks and things and see, like, who did this and what's going to happen. I even saw a headline, tonight is the most shocking piece of television ever, you know, that's quite a big thing to have to live up to. But
were you all
having to keep hold of secrets? And
yes.
Yeah.
Well, we're often interviewed when things are going out and people are trying to, you know, get information out of you and stuff. But I think Saran is an incredible actress in many ways, and she's just very, very popular with all kind of demographics, and I think that helps too. It's a great choice.
It's funny, isn't it? You can't put your... I don't really know her work, because she's from Corrie, right?
I think I think she was in a soap.
Yeah.
I think it was Corrie, and then she's kind of... So she's got all that. You know, that massive popularity.
Yeah.
And then she's gone and done the thing with Leslie Sharp, where they're the detectives, which is brilliant, which I forget the name of.
What is that called? We'll find out.
Anyway, someone's going to find out. That was very rude. I just know they're brilliant. I was lucky enough to work with Leslie as well recently. And I just think she's just brilliant.
Yeah.
You know, she's just brilliant.
Some people have a thing that you just can't put your finger on, but the public love them, don't
she's
they?
She's very clever, though.
Yeah.
She's a very clever actress.
Yeah, yeah.
Very good to work with.
Good cast all round.
All round.
Yeah.
Yep.
Do you find that you get offered a lot of those? Because your character in the first series was a bit like, is he in on this? Is he a bad guy, a good guy? Mm. I feel like you get of that a lot.
Yeah, I love that.
Morally ambiguous characters.
Love that.
Do you?
Love it.
What is it you love so much about that?
Just played well in Silent Witness. You know?
Yeah. Has that been out yet?
No.
No, okay.
It's coming out next year. We're allowed to mention it. But my detective has come back in Silent Witness. But they gave me a story that's slightly ambiguous.
And what is it you love about that?
Well, I suppose it was the same with Billy and Silk. You know, everybody used to come up to me and go, oh, God, you're such a bad person. You're so bad. You're so bad. And he wasn't. He wasn't bad. Yeah, he was. Everything he was doing was for the good of the company and the chambers, you know. It may not have been necessarily legal.
Yeah, yeah.
It doesn't make him a bad person.
Yeah.
I love that idea. I love that idea.
Do you get protective over the character? Like, do you ever get, well, no, actually.
Yeah, I did. I've defended myself a few times in the supermarkets. Yeah, you are so bad. I'm like, no, I'm not. I'm so good. We're having an argument. It's great fun. But
just stick with it. You'll see that I'm a good guy.
There are sort of moral ambiguities in life, which I find fascinating.
Yeah,
and always have. You know, and sort of Dickens and people like that were really fascinated with that idea that, you know, I love that idea of someone who's perhaps in a very good position, say a detective who's very bad. You know, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think that's really interesting ground, you know.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, also, how do you, what is it you use to, you know, not to like sound too wanky, but do you do a bit of prep? You're like, how do I make this guy feel?
Right. Okay. Well, I think all my life, people haven't been quite sure where they stand with me.
You mean in
real life?
Yeah.
So I think whatever that is, I can bring into a character, you know. So, and that's not a great thing.
I was going to say.
Yeah, it's not.
You seem okay with this.
it's not a great thing. But I don't think I'm that good at being able to do, you know, the nice, pleasant stuff all the time. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? What you see is what you get.
Well, you know, it's hard to do that in life, isn't it?
And I have nothing but admiration for people that are 100% happy all the time.
Yeah, and also
I
like...
I can't believe that when they close the door, though, they don't go, they God, don't. I'm so depressed. Yeah.
They sob into their pillow at night.
I kind of try and be fairly, you know, pretty much give people what I am. I'm not good at doing all that. And I think that's probably lost me work, if I'm honest.
Serious?
Because I think people are a bit nervous about me.
But then that's also probably what makes you a great actor, right?
And then just as many people want to employ me for that. So, you know. But I think some actors are just very good at being so really, really nice to everybody all the time. And they're brilliant. And they're great at that, and I've got nothing but admiration.
Do you find... Well, I've got a bit of bitterness about that. only because, you've been doing this way longer than me, but working in this business, but do you find, like, the hustle of it? Like, there's the acting, and there's the performance, and that, and there's the work, but there's also all the other stuff that you have to bring to it, the making sure people like you and being personable and...
Yeah.
Being present and making the choices about what you should do. And it's like, whatever happened to just like getting a job and doing it? You know, there's this whole other machine you have to spin. Do you?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And I think that's probably what I mean, really. So, I don't know. I think, I don't know. It's a tricky one.
Do you do all the sort of Twitter and Instagram and all that?
Do you know
what I do? Do you, yeah.
I do, but I find I campaign tirelessly to save pubs. which is one of my like other, things. I mean, you know, because 15 pubs a week are closing, and you know, right. I know why they're closing and stuff like that. So I'm heavily involved with the campaign team.
Why are they closing?
Well, they're sort of mostly on the whole closing down because a pub co owns it and they need to sell it, and they're not prepared to sell it to a sort of someone else to open a pub. They want to get rid of it quick and sell it to a supermarket chain, a coffee or make them apartments. Yeah, yeah.
And so has it not got anything to do with the fact that people drink less or...
No.
Really?
No pub. No pub should be closed. You know, because that's part of our heritage.
Yeah, yeah.
And there is a massive...
I've been in some pubs that should close.
Well, you know, they may be being run badly now.
Yeah.
But in 2 years' time, they could be turned around and it could be massively popular. And it could be making a huge amount of money, and it could be putting money back into that area, and it could be doing stuff for charity, and you know, people after sporting events could go to it and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So if you snuff a pub out, you've snuffed it out forever.
And is that a real statistic, 15 pubs a week?
At the moment, yeah. It's gone from 7 to 15. It's getting worse.
See, my mum owned a pub for many years out in the country, and it was a different thing there, but... Genuinely, when she first bought the pub in the mid-90s, it was rammed all the time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then when she retired and let go of it 3 years ago or whatever it was, by that point it was, you know, they'd shut early a lot of nights.
Right.
You know, most of their trade was food. But the thing is it's like there's the smoking thing and there's the people are more health conscious, but the drink driving thing killed pubs in the countryside.
Because
people drink drive all the time.
Yeah.
And now it's like, I can't, like, how do we get to the pub?
Right.
They don't have Uber and taxis in the countryside.
Okay. Well, you know, I still don't think they should close. I agree with all those things, but...
Should they all be listed?
They should be. I mean, not one pub should close from this day on.
Okay.
Right. You know, and there are some that are Grade 2 listed. There are some that are in doomsday books, you know, that have been knocked down and have having houses built on them. You know, it's morally wrong.
Yeah, yeah.
It's our heritage. And, you know, there's a better sort of life coming for pubs, but the actual real estate's not going to be there. There's more microbreweries now and craft beers and stuff than ever.
Yeah.
I get the health thing. I get the driving thing. There has to be a way of making these things work, but a good pub. I mean, anyone knows that a good pub.
I love pubs like beautifully done. I don't particularly like the drink they sell, but the Samuel Smith pubs, they have these amazing, like with
they're
the glass
really good,
and
they?
The
yeah.
architecture, yeah. they're always amazing.
They're beautiful, actually.
But just not the best alcohol you can buy.
going back to social media, it is a tool and it's a useful tool.
Yeah.
You know.
You're clearly into the what would you call it? Not the restaurant world or the hotel. What do you call that world? The
I don't know what you call it.
Food? Servicing. Well, I don't know. Because years ago,
anyone for a long time.
Not even yourself. No.
I was a bit late this morning.
Yeah, that's true. It's always you've only got yourself to blame. I was in a place in... I used to live in Kennington for a while. And I was in there.
Franklin's, yeah.
And you served... We'd never met before, and you served me.
Right.
And I was like, I'm sure he's doing better than this. I thought you were, like, just waiting. But it turned out you co-owned it or owned it?
Yeah, so co-owned Franklin's.
Yeah.
Franklin's Restaurant and Franklin's Farm Shop, which is in East Dulwich.
Right.
And they had a little foray over into Kennington for a while. They were offered a space there. To try and make it work.
Yeah.
It's a tricky area, Kenny.
That is. It's so transient. Yeah. There you go.
But I think someone's doing very well, though, which is great. But we had a little tenure there, almost like a pop-up.
That spot was like restaurant after restaurant just died in that spot. Yeah. Yeah, it was weird.
Yeah.
It was weird. So you...
So Franklin's, yeah.
Yeah. Franklin, well, we've covered that. Okay, that was just a little bit of like entrepreneurship of you, right?
Yeah.
If that's a word, I don't know if that is.
It's great.
Keeping your fingers in other pies.
It does really well in
East Dulwich. Yeah.
Yeah. East Dulwich, they've been open, I think, going on.
Was that a
years
what
now,
is that? Oh, get involved in this in case the acting dries up, or was it just for fun?
It was
a
passion. I've got a real passion for small local shops and small localism generally. Like farmers and small farmers, and I hate supermarkets. So I had a passion for that. I wanted to open one in an old butcher shop in Kent. That fell through. And the guys at Franklin's said, come and join us. There's a shop opposite. Why don't we call it Franklin's? We'll go in all together and we'll have a Franklin's farm shop, Franklin's restaurant. Yeah, yeah. Boom. So it's been there 8 years, I think, now. It's great.
Yeah. So you do loads of different roles, right? Yeah. But obviously you were first properly introduced to the world in Game On, right?
Game On, yeah.
And is that a show you still get people come up to you about?
Still on Twitter daily.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Isn't it amazing when something hits like that and just stays in the consciousness like that?
Yeah, totally.
That must have been quite a... Well, first of all, it would have changed everything for you, right?
Yeah.
But also, how daunted were you because someone else had played that part in the first series that you were taking over a character?
Yeah, I didn't really think about it.
Didn't you?
I knew Ben really well.
Okay.
Ben and I had just done a series together. They saw Ben and I for the series, and Ben got it.
Yeah.
And he got that when we were working together, and when he decided he didn't want to do it anymore, they phoned me out, and I went, yeah, all right, well, that's all right.
Oh, well, you pulled off quite an amazing task of actually doing that and then doing it well and it going on to be successful.
I get cab drivers that go, I'll tell you what, that bloke was crap. That was crap. When he took over or something, they get it the wrong way round.
Really?
They're basically saying Ben was much better. It was hilarious. No. They get it all wrong.
And when they start bringing it up, are you like, do you go tense going, I know it's coming.
What is it about cab drivers? They can contain so much information.
I don't know what it is. And when do they watch all this telly?
They go, you're in my favourite programme ever. Unbelievable. My absolute favourite programme. What was it called again? Yeah. They're like, it's two words.
This is bizarre. You know a road.
It's two words. It's Game On. Yeah, and it's with that girl. Oh, my God. She's beautiful. I love her. I absolutely love her. She's the best girl in the world. What's her name again? Why do you write it down?
Yeah, but they know every road in London.
Yeah, they know everything. That's why they can't remember anything.
Yeah, everything in their brain.
Entire head.
That's it.
Streets.
If you said to them, can you take me to Park Hill Road? They went, I had to remove that road out of my brain so that I could remember Game On.
Yeah, they wouldn't be able to take anyone there.
Yeah.
That's right. The guy gets in the cab and they go, no, I don't know.
Sorry, mate, I had to remember a couple of titles of TV shows, so I don't know those roads. So you weren't daunted by it at all. You just went in and...
There wasn't really any time to be daunted by it. It was happening.
That's great, though.
It was happening. And
I think some people would have been...
I knew everybody. And you know what? Sam and Matt were hilarious.
Yeah.
And they let me put a little line in as an outtake afterwards, which was we were watching a programme where someone had taken over from a character. And we said... The other two next to me said, don't you hate it when they do that, when they change a character?
Yeah.
And we just let the audience really laugh at it, and I kind of just stared at the TV, and we thought that was a really good thing to do. The writer hated us for doing that.
Really?
Because it was our idea. She wasn't her idea. She thought it was naff. But do you know what? Do you know, it's live in front of an audience.
Yeah.
It's terrifying. It's absolutely terrifying. But there's kind of no time. You get a week to rehearse and then you do it live. I remember at one point everything going into slow motion and there's some girls down the front went, oh, he's not as good as Ben.
Yeah,
really loud. And I was like, sort of went in slow motion. You could see the dust floating through the lights. I turned around to Matt and he went, just get on with it.
Yeah.
It was very funny.
You must have got then after that, just because I did a show a few years ago. Afterwards, all I ever got offered or asked to go up for were exactly that character.
Right, yeah.
So you must have had a period of time where that was...
I did, yeah.
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 And did you deliberately fight against that, or were you like, no, as long as it's work?
I don't know. I can't remember. I think I was starting to get other roles as well. I think they quite like the idea of me... sort of generally being a Jack the Lad, but it was then that sort of drama, you know, I started getting into much more serious stuff. Mm-hmm. But I did really well on like voiceovers, and they were very similar sort of character, you know?
Yeah,
so
yeah,
it was brilliant, you know.
And what do you prefer, drama, comedy?
Ooh, tricky one that. I absolutely love comedy, just because it's kind of mad, you know. I've got a couple of... We've just had Porters out, actually, which was quite good fun.
What is Porters?
Porters was a series on Dave.
Right.
Which we think, you know, we'd kind of piloted it.
Yeah, yeah.
We think it's going to happen, so hopefully.
Yeah, yeah.
What's the
setup of that?
Kind of Porters in a hospital.
Yeah.
But my character is this crazed charity guy,
mm-hmm.
sort of it works for the hospital.
I'm told Rutger Hauer's in it.
Yeah, Rutger Hauer. Kelsey Grammer makes an appearance.
Okay, yeah, that's an eclectic international cast.
And so that's good. And then we've got High and Dry coming out, which is the new Mark Wootton thing.
Oh, yes. You're in that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, so amazing. That's the one... There we go. We can tie this up to the beginning. That's the one where you're stranded
on a
desert island,
which is how I described moving to
the countryside. You want to like chip away at bits of wood and create whittle. Is that because you did that in High and Dry?
I will survive.
Do you think you could survive if you were just plonked in the middle of nowhere with no, no rations, no.
I'm pretty good. Yeah. I'm pretty hands on. I'm pretty kind of.
If you had no weaponry or any kind of paraphernalia, and you had to kill an animal with your bare hands and eat it, could you do that?
Yeah. That's really, really hungry.
Yeah, straight in. Yep. Yeah. No problem, mate.
Yeah. I love food.
Yeah.
It's real. That
food
would be
is good, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's good. Food is amazing.
Yeah. What's your favourite food?
I think Italian.
Really? Do you know what? I asked this to someone recently. I said, look, if you could only have one cuisine, one national dish, or not dish, but their food, Thai, Italian, Indian, whatever.
Thai and Italian, both the same.
What?
Both the same. Good, fresh ingredients.
Well, okay. Well, you sound like Gordon Ramsay now. Local produce.
Yeah, simply put in a pan.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't go wrong.
Well, this segues nicely to your little appearance on MasterChef.
This is fantastic, because did you see it last night?
No.
Not one of them could make a prawn pasta. I mean,
it's pretty straightforward, isn't it?
Gosh.
So you good cook?
Very good.
Really?
Yeah, very good.
Can you cook me something?
Of course I can.
Do you know how to do, like, free from, like, that? No dairy, no gluten, all that? Can you still create a good...
Yeah, I suppose.
You don't look convinced, though.
Is that your thing?
At the moment it is, just for a while, but you literally, your body language was like, why would you do that?
Would you have to do gluten-free pasta?
I think at the moment I would, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
I've got to do it for 3 months.
Yeah, do that.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You'd be surprised how nice it can be. You still know. I thought you were a better actor than this. You're saying fine, but your body's going, fucking hell, mate. So what's coming up for you now?
Can we just, go back to the prefer comedy or drama? I think I prefer drama. Yeah. I think I prefer drama.
Do you?
Yeah. But anyway.
But listen, no, let's stick with that. Why is that? Because sometimes turning up every day on a set, doing something quite heavy, be...
It's harder work. It's much more challenging.
Yeah?
Yeah, drama. Yeah.
What do you tap into? Like, what do you, when you're like in comedy mode, or is there some, are you a different person? Do you sort of, is it just about timing? Like, do you modulate your sort of performance? Like, what is it that you consciously think is different about the two? I've got a theory.
I'll hear it in a minute. But I honestly think the challenge for good drama, I think, is doing less.
Mm-hmm.
And I constantly, every job I do, try and work on that. That's all I do. So that's my personal...
To the point where you don't turn up.
To the point where other actors go, are you just...
Are you doing anything?
I mean, is that it? You've just found out someone's died. Yeah.
My theory is drama is behaviour and comedy is performance.
That's good.
Do you like that?
Brilliant. I'm going to steal that.
Thanks. You can have that. We'll cut it out of this so that no one knows that I said it first, if you want.
I could pay you every time I say it.
Yeah. Let's do it. Just £1. I don't mind.
That's good.
I think you're going to use it a lot. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Could be £10 a week.
That's
quite a lot.
That's not too bad, is it?
For your gluten-free pasta.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And to get an Uber into work so I don't have to tube again.
Don't do that again.
No. Yeah. That's ridiculous. Yeah.
Gluten-free, eh? Mm. And what, dairy-free?
Dairy-free. Everything. Sugar-free. I'm doing a...
Sugar-free's good.
Yeah.
Yeah. I often do yeast-free.
Yeah?
Yeast-free's
Any
good.
Any reason for that? Why not?
Just cuts out a little bit of weight.
Yeah.
A bit of the waste.
Does it? Does yeast have an effect on weight?
Yeah, it does if you've got Candida albicans.
Yeah. We're having a very metrosexual conversation right now.
Yes,
I like it.
Love to cook for you.
Wow, I feel really blushing. When can I come round?
Well,
when are the family away next?
We'll chat about it. Maybe you can stop the Uber halfway.
Yeah. What dog?
I just meant he could drop you off, for God's sake.
Oh, right, okay.
God almighty. Right, what
sorry.
What kind of radio
I don't
show
know.
Is this?
It's
wow.
Very different type okay. of radio show.
Come on, what next?
Well, I was going to ask you about your guilty pleasure, because we like to get people on to pick something. You seem very certain about this.
Easy peasy.
What is it?
It's reality TV cop shows.
Specifically cop
wife,
shows?
As soon as the wife goes. I mean, if I know the wife has got... the wife, that's pathetic.
Yeah.
That's sort of like old Cockney chat, isn't it? The wife.
Soon as that, the you wife, went northern though. Yeah. That's Cockney. The wife.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, as soon as my wife
tells
me she's having a night out and I get the kids to bed, that's it. I just literally cannot wait to get back downstairs.
Are you like scheduling when to start the cop show?
I just go straight through the channels and then I'll go on catch up.
Yeah.
And I'll go straight to police, whatever, motorway.
Yeah.
So, and there's one at the moment where the cops have got like a camera on them. It's mm-hmm. just genius. You know, there's a lot of kind of melee of fighting, and there's somebody slightly overweight, heavy breathing, and I just love it. American kind of cop chase shows.
Yeah, like those.
I mean, I just a world of reality, like anything, you know.
Do you what?
Someone like the smashing a door down of someone's, you know, some poor drug dealer, you know, he's obviously been sitting there all night smoking, then suddenly he's got like eight guys all dressed in black, kind of screaming at him.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. I saw
one recently where the guy, there was CCTV footage of the guy they'd arrested. Mm-hmm. They put him in a prison cell, and then the CCTV footage, you see him going to the toilet and taking the drugs out of his anus.
Ah, that's not good.
So that he could then take it,
because
he was that much of a addict, that he was willing to take something that had just come from his...
Stopped.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought, that's quite... Do they need to get permission? I know he's a drug addict and breaking the law, but do you still need to get permission? And then did he say, yep? No. Well, in fact, across the board, some of these people, you see their faces. Some are pixelated, some are not.
Yeah.
At what point are they asking them when they're arresting someone or chasing... Hey, yeah. Can you just sign this release form? Yeah.
Yeah.
How does that work?
I don't know.
As an avid watcher, I thought you might know the...
It's, no, but I do think about it.
Yeah.
I do think about it. But I really, really enjoy it. And it really is a guilty pleasure, because it's not a great thing to watch, is it? But then there's a very serious series on at the moment called Detective Murder on the Streets, which mm-hmm. is a real show about real detectives in Manchester, and it really was bleak, incredibly bleak, and the most amazing people and the incredible.
So did it feel more of a like an earnest thing rather than like sort of voyeuristic?
It was very good to watch as an actor.
Really?
Yeah. Especially as I was about to play Detective Chief Inspector.
In Silent Witness? No, yeah, Silent Witness?
Witness yeah. yeah. It was very good. It's really good. I don't know. I really kind of, I suppose it's because I've played those roles all my life.
Also, when you act and you're reading scripts and you're involved in fiction all the time, it is nice to just watch stuff that is, you know, real, quote unquote, real. Like, I just watch stuff about, you know, building houses or...
There's all that.
All that kind of stuff all the time.
And I've had to...
Rick Stein, I'm obsessed with at the moment.
I've had to stop the Food Network. I've had to cancel it.
Yeah.
Because I could have done 24/7 on it, literally.
Yeah. What is it? Why do we like watching other people cook?
Rick Stein is one of the best as well. You know?
I love him.
Yeah,
I love his little trips, his weekend aways. Hey, Rick, what you doing?
I desperately wanted to do a cooking show.
Yeah, maybe we should pitch it. I'm up for it.
Well, Matt Dawson and
I'm good at washing up, so I'll do the washing up, you do the cooking, yeah?
Matt Dawson and I are trying to pitch something. We're going to pitch something together.
Okay. Well, don't tell me that. I've just asked you if you want to do something.
Sorry,
and you just rejected me and told me you're doing it with someone else.
What will we do then? What will we do?
I don't know. You need a spin. That's the problem. What if it's cooking whilst being in the back of the
Uber?
Cops? No, the cops' cars are chasing down, and we're combining everything then. And you and I are in the back, like, what can you like doing salads, because there's you can't cook on a hob in the back of a
good
police car.
I'd like to film you pitching it.
All right.
Yeah.
With that. All right. I'll ask the commissioners if they mind me filming it.
Right.
Yeah. All right. Neil, it's been a pleasure talking to you.
Pleasure talking to you.
I'm a fan of your work.
Oh, thanks,
I love
man.
Watching you perform. Good luck with all the new shows. Cause it sounds like you've got a bunch of stuff coming out.
Yeah.
That's great. Yeah. But share the work. Don't get greedy.
Okay.
why don't you tell us why you've picked the song we're going to play out on? This is the Great Escape theme. What is it about that?
What can you say? I mean, it was one of those seminal films that I remember sitting there watching with all my family, and then you'd watch it again and again, year on year on, probably Christmas time or any of those kind
Easter,
of times.
Christmas, always.
It just had the most. It's got the most incredible cast.
Yeah,
it's a brilliant, brilliant film. It's Steve McQueen, and it's great. The music throughout was just fantastic, and I think it reminds me of family. It reminds me of really lovely, lovely, lovely times being with my family and watching family films together, and just that real appreciation of someone like Steve McQueen. I mean, it was just,
he's a hero of yours.
Of course he is. You know, of course he is. I mean, just everything about him was so exciting.
He was weirdly quite, not limited is probably it, but he did a thing, didn't he? But yet he was so iconic.
It's just, I mean, they just don't make them like that anymore.
Yeah, they don't, do they?
You know, they really don't. I suppose Tom Hardy is kind of exciting like that.
Yeah.
You know, in that sense, he's sort of quite dangerous. He's much more varied.
Yeah.
Don't really see him on motorbikes, do you? Not like Steve was always like at Le Mans or something like that. And that was the other thing. It was like, my God, he's like racing stuff all the time.
Well, you'd have insurance problems now, wouldn't
macho.
You?
They did. He smashed up a car when he was filming once. He smashed up a Ferrari. Man.
Also, they were allowed to be stars at that age as well.
Yeah.
It didn't all have to be in their 20s and 30s. It was like you could be, you know, an idol in your 40s and 50s and...
Who are the men now?
I don't know.
Who are the sort of manly men?
Neil Stuke.
That's very sweet. That's very sweet.
Okay, well, thank you so much for coming in.
You're very welcome.
This is The Great Escape. Who did this? Who's the composer?
It's not John Williams, is it?
It's not John Williams. It's too early for John Williams, I think. Bernstein?
Yeah.
Is it?
That'll
do.
That sounds great.
Thanks.
That sounds great.